Your Honors, good morning. May it please the Court. Andrew Alsdorf.
Just hold on a second until we get everybody set here.
Thank you. Andrew Alsdorf on behalf of the Snohomish County Prosecutor's Office representing the State of Washington as the appellants in this matter. I'd like to reserve 3 minutes, please. Your Honor, in this case, the State of Washington charged the defendant with unlawful possession of firearm in the first degree when they found 5 firearms in a locked gun safe inside the defendant's bedroom. They were inside the defendant's bedroom in the first place because they held a valid and signed search warrant for the entire house in which the defendant was residing along with his son and his mother. Now, the search warrant was based on an allegation that the defendant's son, Jeremy Shank, had committed 7 assorted crimes, including possession of a controlled substance, mail theft, identity theft, and the search warrant authorized them to seize a number of things, some of which were very small, such as controlled substances, papers of ownership, receipts, things of that nature. And what happened was the trial court erred in this case by suppressing the discovery of firearms within that locked gun safe on the theory that police needed a second search warrant to enter that gun safe because it was locked and because the officers had reasonably formed the belief that the particular bedroom inside this house was more the defendant's than it was the son's. We believe this was error because it violated the community living unit rule announced in State versus Alexander.
I'm curious as to your preference for that rule other than it would have broader application in other cases. I was on the panel here in Martinez and signed that opinion that was then reversed by the Supreme Court. How does this case differ from Martinez, other than we have a safe rather than blood? In Martinez, you could seize the blood, but the blood had no evidentiary value. Here you could seize the safe, but the safe had no evidentiary value. This was not an investigation for theft of safes.
Correct.
If it was, it would be different, right? Because the safe would have evidentiary value. So how is this different from Martinez?
I think this would be closer to Martinez if the police had removed the locked safe from the home and then, without a second warrant at the police station, breached the locked safe because under the Martinez reasoning, the warrant implicitly authorizes a search of...
Why does it matter where they break into the safe?
Well, because the search warrant that they held said search an entire premises, search this residential unit, this house, a typical single-family residence.
What constitutional value or constitutional right is furthered by waiting to get back to the police station to break open the safe?
I'm not sure any constitutional right held by the defendant is furthered at all, but it's a practical recognition that police are not always going to be able to breach on site everything that they encounter.
So really, you don't want to win on the basis of Martinez because you want to win bigger than that. That's really what you're arguing, right? You want the search of the home to be everything.
And I think that's the current state
everything,
of the law.
Everything, even if not mentioned in the warrant.
Well, that's right, and
so does it matter that it said locked containers?
It matters to the extent that it would have allowed the police to remove a locked container from the residence, being able to breach it or not knowing what's inside.
Well, don't you take the position it's not only remove it, but remove and search it?
And that's where Martinez comes in. I could be here arguing that the breaching at the police station, although not explicitly authorized, is valid under Martinez because of the implicit search authority inherent in all search warrants.
But those are
not the facts.
There was testimony about and findings regarding the subjective belief of the officers
that's
at
right.
the site. Why do we care? If an officer, if it's a warranted search, an old-fashioned term that's fallen out of favor, but actually is a pretty good term. A warranted search. You've got a search warrant. And it's a judge saying, you can search these things. Why do we care what the police officer's thinking? Why does that subjective view of the police officer matter at all? It's just about what does the judge authorize?
I believe that's correct, Your Honor, and I believe that's part of the error that was committed in this case was caring at all or focusing on how the officers determined as they're going through this house whose bedroom is this.
So to the extent that there's any case law anywhere in a circumstance that discusses this, that deals with the subjective mental state of the officers, that only applies in those states that, like the federal government, under the federal constitution, that apply a good faith exception to police mistakes in searches and seizures.
That's right. I suppose
and that's not Washington.
That's true.
So is there any reason that we care about what the subjective impression of the officer would be?
I suppose under the old version of the plain view doctrine, it could matter whether the officers were truly surprised or whether this was
an
inadvertent discovery. Well, and to be clear, once the police get into the locked cabinet, they still need to rely on a warrantless exception, i.e. the plain view doctrine, in order to actually lay hands on the guns and take those guns. And that's where the rule used to be that discovery had to be
inadvertent. Only if they didn't want to keep them in the safe and lug the safe.
Fair enough.
There, right? I mean, they could have kept them in the case and lugged the safe. That just would be difficult.
That's right. And so I think ultimately, Your Honor has seized on a correct principle, which is that the subjective intent or observations of these officers does not matter when they are holding a judicially authorized search warrant for the entire premises. I'll reserve the balance of my time.
Morning.
Ready as I'll be, I guess. Good morning. My name is John Rodabaugh. I represent Mr. Schenck in this particular matter. It's a relatively daunting process being here. It's my first time in the Court of Appeals, so.
We fully realize that the bad behavior you engaged in was winning. Okay, and that requires you to be here and defend it. So nobody's holding it against you that you won. I mean, that's.
Well, Your Honor, I think that, you know, in looking at this particular search, I mean, this search warrant authorizes the search of the home, and it allows the officers to look everywhere in the home for the things that are listed on the warrant that they're allowed to seize. I mean, think about it, you know, from a standpoint of search means to look for. So they have a warrant that says they can go look for the items that they're allowed to seize, take in the house. And one of the items that they're allowed to take out of the house are locked containers. Doesn't say that they can search locked containers. Doesn't say they can open locked containers. Doesn't say they can break them. It says they can take them.
Martinez,
right?
It says you can seize the blood. Doesn't say you can test it.
Correct. But in Martinez.
So how are you going to distinguish Martinez from your case?
Well, the blood is taken from the target of the warrant to investigate a particular crime that's listed in the warrant that the police believe has been committed. And that blood contains evidence taken from the target of the warrant to support the charge that was the basis for the warrant. In my case here, Mr. Schenck, Jeffrey, is not the target of the warrant. His son Jeremy is the target of the warrant. That warrant is issued to find evidence of crimes relating to burglary and controlled substance. The evidence taken from this gun safe was not taken to support a charge against Jeremy Schenck, but a charge against Jeffrey Schenck. And the subjective view of the officers is important in that aspect in distinguishing it, because at the time the officers opened the safe, their testimony is that they admit they weren't looking for any of the evidence that was listed on the warrant.
You agree that the warrant authorized the seizure of the safe?
I agree that, yes, the warrant said they could take the safe if they thought it had evidentiary value.
Would Oh, does it say it has to have evidentiary value?
No, it says they can seize any locked container in the home.
Okay, so once they have the locked container, how do they know if it has evidentiary value, and what are they required to do to make that determination?
Well, the totality of the circumstance are going to tell us whether or not they have probable cause to open that particular safe
what
in addition to.
What case says that?
Pardon me?
What case do you rely on for that assertion?
Well, Your Honor, there's a whole string of cases that deal with, you know, when you search an automobile and you find a locked box inside the automobile, you need a separate warrant for that. I find it hard to believe that a locked box in a home has less protection.
Does it involve a warrant where the police were authorized to seize the locked container in the car?
I didn't catch the whole question. I'm sorry.
Do any of those cases involve a warrant that authorized the police to search the car and seize any locked container found within the car?
I wasn't able to find any because all the published cases deal with the opening of locked containers where the warrant was silent about locked containers as opposed to seizing locked containers.
This is what happened in Martinez. And obviously I'm interested in your case and I'm interested in Martinez because I like to get slapped down as relatively infrequently as possible by the Supreme Court. In Martinez, the warrant said you can seize his blood. It did not say that you could search his blood. Obviously, in the trial court, they admitted the evidence that was derived from the testing of the blood. And Mr. Martinez was found to be guilty, and that's why I met the case. So then it came here, and the argument was, read the warrant. The warrant's a court order. You can seize the blood, but a search is an entirely different thing. We know this because the people that wrote the Bill of Rights included both the word search and the word seizure, indicating that they did not mean the same thing. A warrant can authorize you to search, and it can authorize you to seize. It can authorize you to do both. And in this case, it only authorized one thing. We agreed. And so we wrote an opinion that said it authorized you to seize the blood, but if you wanted to search it, you had to get another warrant. And one of the questions asked at oral argument then was, if this was, could you search this blood for HIV without a warrant or any number of things? If entitling you to seize it entitles you to do whatever you want to it, there's no warrant limitation. Supreme Court said no. That if you seize it, you're entitled to determine whether it has evidentiary value. So now we have your case. The warrant says you can seize the safe. It doesn't say you can search the safe. Under the Court of Appeals decisions in Martinez, it seems like you win. Under the Supreme Court decision in Martinez, that seems to be less clear. So tell me how I rule in your favor without getting another missive back from the Supreme Court saying two strikes now.
Well, the distinction is that the only reason the blood was taken in Martinez, and I think the Supreme Court in essence held that they could search it for the alcohol content because that was the purpose of the warrant and the purpose of the search, and that implicitly in the purpose of the warrant and the purpose of the search, we understand that blood will be tested to develop evidence of that particular investigation. But that's not what we have here. Here we have the purpose of the warrant is to develop evidence against Jeremy Shank. The purpose of the search is to develop evidence against Jeremy Shank. But what we have is the officers conducting a search that they know isn't going to develop evidence about Jeremy Shank. That's their belief at the time they did it. These officers haven't read the warrant, so they don't even know what their limitations are anyway. They're just in there under this general idea that they can grab everything that's in the house, according to their testimony. And then they're looking in the safe for evidence of a crime that's not listed on their warrant, about a target that's not the target of their investigation. It's an entirely different investigation that isn't foreseeable from the onset of the execution of the search warrant.
When do we switch from being concerned about that which the judge authorized? In other words, the judge signs a warrant that says you are warranted to do these things. When do we switch from that to being to a consideration of the subjective mental state of the police officers?
When the item seized isn't contemplated in the search warrant to begin with or authorized to be taken, because ultimately what we have here is the seizure of a firearm, okay? Firearms aren't listed in the warrant. They're being seized to charge a person who's not the target of the investigation, is not the target of the warrant. And while the community living arrangements...
They've seized the safe and taken it back to the station, and then for officer safety decided to look inside and make sure there was nothing dangerous.
Well, I think on the facts of this case, they could have done a variety of things. They could have taken the safe back to the police station, and then... If for officer safety, I know there's some exceptions there to determine what's
in it. So the identity of whose bedroom it is didn't affect their ability to seize the safe?
I think that it may not have affected their ability to seize the safe. I think it depends on when and where they open it. I mean, the practical aspects of this particular case is the officers at that time, they could have called for an additional search warrant as well to open that safe, and they could have called for a search warrant to open that safe with the intent of finding evidence against Mr. Schenck, Jeffrey Schenck, not Jeremy Schenck. But they didn't do either of those things. They just, you know, they came across a locked box, went and got a pair of bolt cutters out of my client's garage and chopped the lock off it and opened it up. And the state says, well, then it's plain view that, oh, we have these firearms that are obviously contraband. Nothing about these firearms is obviously contraband. We have a gun safe that has guns in it. Nothing about that is obviously contraband. So, I mean, while we didn't get to the plain view analysis in the trial court because the trial court found that it was outside of the scope of the warrant, but we don't have the plain view exception anyway. I mean, even if you say that, oh, yeah, the officers are lawfully in the safe, they don't see obvious contraband. They see some firearms that there's nothing about them that are obviously illegal.
So
subjective information in order to decide that they're evidence of a crime.
Yes, you need other evidence than just simply seeing firearms in a gun safe.
So your argument is there was no probable cause to search related to the dad about anything.
At the time the search was committed, they may have had probable cause, but that probable cause wasn't vetted by a magistrate to determine whether or not it was allowing the entrance into an area that the officers knew the target of that now new investigation had a reasonable expectation of privacy. And I mean, that goes to, you know, Judge Leach's question, what right are we vindicating here? We're vindicating the right of a person who is not subject to any investigations, not suspect of any crime, having their personal rights violated during the course of an unrelated investigation that broaches out to attack their rights as well. I thank you for your time.
Thank you.
Your Honors, I'll start by simply disagreeing with counsel's reading of the record to the extent that he's ascribing to the officers an affirmative disbelief that they are going to find any evidence of the son, Jeremy Schenck's crimes within that safe. As I stated in my brief, it would have been malpractice on their part to go back to their sergeant after this search and say, well, gee, Sergeant, we didn't search that safe because we kind of thought that was our target's dad's bedroom and our target's dad's safe. Well, in these community living arrangements, it's entirely reasonable to think that evidence of a crime may be stashed in someone else's nominative bedroom under the theory that family members help each other, and you need to check all of the containers within a home that are capable of storing these
items. So they open the safe and they see guns. What was it that caused them to seize the guns?
The plain view doctrine authorized the seizure.
What was the facts that were known that caused them to seize
their knowledge going into it that the defendant in this case, Jeffrey Schenck, was a convicted felon prohibited from possessing firearms. That combined with their initial investigation of the house itself.
Was that part of the probable cause affidavit?
No, because their probable cause affidavit for this search warrant focused on the defendant's son. That's correct. But, of course, they know who they're dealing with in the defendant himself, to the extent that they at least know he's got this felony conviction.
So the only warrantless activity was the seizure of the guns after the safe was opened.
That's right. And unfortunately, although the plain view doctrine was cited in the state's briefing below, the court didn't address it at all in the findings and conclusions.
So we don't have a ruling on that to review.
Well, to the extent that it was argued below and essentially ignored by the trial court, I mean, we've asserted that that was error.
Well, a ruling that doesn't need to be made and isn't made isn't a ruling. I mean, what we've got, it seems to me what we've got is whether or not they're allowed to breach the safe to see if there's anything of evidentiary value.
That's step one and certainly what we've argued about the most.
The trial court said no. We're reviewing that ruling. There's no plain view ruling that we're...
Well, I disagree because somehow in order to get those guns in front of a jury someday, the police were going to have to do more than just see them in the safe. They were going to have to hold them and take them into evidence.
Wait until the trial court rules on that once the trial court knows our decision about the safe, breaching the safe.
I disagree. I think it was argued below, and it's clearly applied to the facts of this case.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.